This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the evening, as promised, we're soon going to head into trying to understand, I guess, what's going on in the courts surrounding BFM's own Ezra Zayed and a sort of very long-term legal battle that we've all been watching here at the station. But first, we were speaking earlier on about the value of hosting, about the value of being hospitable, about being a good host, good guest. We've been asking you for your thoughts and experiences. First up, we have this from Maggie.
Good hosting is a rare gift, so the rest of us have to learn how to be one. It should be started at a young age so that by the time we are adults, it comes as second nature. I've come to recognize when my mom used to force me to serve drinks or food to guests and dutifully answer all questions about school grades was not sadistic delight, but preparing me for the grown-up world to come. Sadly, with all the gadgets taking increasing control of the younger generation and our permissive, understanding parenting style, we let them go untrained, unprepared, and becoming almost antisocial.
I feel like Maggie's message describes me perfectly 100%. My parents did so much to sort of train me to become a good host, like serve drinks and learn to talk to people or speak with people and listen to their stories. But as I grow up and I have all these gadgets, I'm a very poor host. And just thinking of all the other hosts that I've encountered in my life, how very kind they were to me and my family, I think they've set the standard for me that I want to aspire to.
Yeah, and I do think I agree that if you start it at a young age, that second nature thing, it's so important, right?
Yeah.
Like it's so much better and easier when it comes that way. But at the same time, I'm going back to my it's okay if it's not perfect thing, because I need to believe that. So I do think that even if we right now aren't where we want to be as hosts, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't keep awkwardly trying. The spirit is in the awkward trying. We have next up this from Sue, who says, I'm born thanks to my generous parents to be a good host, but I had a bad experience a couple of years ago with a guest who I felt crossed the line with generous hosts. This guest was a former classmate, now residing overseas. She said she would stay a few days. It stretched to 8. I noticed she did not offer to pay a single cent for any meals during the entire stay. She orchestrated situations where someone else would pick up the bill. I'm a good host, down to providing clean bed sheets, clean towels, toiletries, hot drinks, home-cooked food, driving her to her personal appointments, the whole works. Playing good host is in my DNA. Would I play that again? Definitely. But I'm not going to repeat my offer to this former classmate. It was a real eye-opener to me that there are guests who take advantage of their hosts.
So it's great that you've decided, despite this very bad experience, to keep it going, right? And I think that that's one lesson learned, that sometimes guests can also be ill-mannered. It's not just on you to be the good host, but it's also on the other party to make sure that they... Well, a bit, it sounds a bit too harsh, but, you know their place, right? Know where they can go, know the limits of this interaction. If you say that out of this period, I'll stay for this amount of days, if you want to extend it, perhaps ask the host if you can do that and offer to compensate in some way, perhaps through buying a meal or something.
I think being a good guest is a little bit of give and take, right? Mm. It is accepting the hospitality that is extended to you, firstly, not turning down every single glass of water, saying, no, don't fuss over me, I'll sit here silently. You know, I think that it's important not to do that. And it's also important not to take too much.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a balance that we all need to learn to strike. And again, if you learn that as a kid, so much easier. But we are all doing our best. All of us with our noses in our phones. I swear we are doing our best. We're trying. Keep those stories coming. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next story in the meantime, we're looking at the latest update on the court case involving our colleague, BFM's own Ezra Zayed, whom we spoke to actually on the 27th of September.
Yep.
In a more, I suppose, celebratory mood at the time, thinking that, you know, a decision had gone his way and this would kind of be the end of this drawn out thing. But yesterday, the Petaling District Sharia Subordinate Court postponed Ezra's case management to January, pending the filing of a motion to appeal with the federal court.
So just a bit of a recap, right? Ezra has been in a legal battle since 2012 to challenge his arrest and prosecution by the Selangor Islamic Religious Department, or JAIS. JAIS had seized 180 copies of his Bahasa Malaysia version of Irsyad Manji's book, Allah, Liberty and Love. And in September this year, the Court of Appeal quashed the charges against Ezra, and this was supposed to put an end to his trial in the Sharia courts.
But yesterday, the charges were not withdrawn. The Selangor State Government legal advisor had returned to the chief Sharia prosecutor to inquire on Ezra's trial. Sharia prosecutor Fairuz Jaffar said his superior had instructed him to withdraw from the case and requested it to be deferred while awaiting the filing of the motion stay of execution.
So as I always do whenever it comes to a legal case, a legal story, I hurry along to the people who can actually talk about it, because I just don't want to get tripped up, right, over what are very specific terms, what is a very specific situation. So we're going to be hearing from two people in this half hour. We're going to be hearing, of course, from Ezra himself, really just an update on how he might be feeling, but also from civil and Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir to kind of wrap our heads around basically what we just said, right? What exactly does that mean? Nizam is also one of the lawyers who represented Ezra in his Court of Appeal proceedings. Nizam, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So, first things first then, what is the basis for this decision from the Selangor Sharia Court?
Well, if you ask me for the basis, I'm a bit unsure, because certainly evidence to the contrary is there, i.e. you have a valid Court of Appeal order, but despite the existence of that order, the Sharia Court nevertheless exercised its powers not to grant a discharge not amounting to an acquittal against Ezra, and nearly adjourn proceedings till next year.
What would that mean, discharge not amounting to an acquittal?
Well, it's, I suppose, a simple way of explaining that is he's not released from the charges as such. But despite that, because you have this civil court order that he has obtained, they have no choice but to let him go, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in practical terms, what does this mean for the case at hand?
Well, unfortunately, it simply means that Ezra Zayed, who has an order affirming that the prosecution against him is contrary to law, is still made subject to the charge in the Sharia courts. So, practically, it still means he's got to turn up for his cases. You know, he still has, I suppose, you know, he's got to be present at all proceedings, even next year, save and until the court decides to make the appropriate order it should make in law, which is, at the very least, I think, a discharge not amounting to an acquittal.
Now, more broadly speaking, what precedents might this decision set in the future?
There seems to be instances of the Sharia authorities either grappling with the fact that there are, you know, sort of other courts granting orders against what they are doing, or the alternative is that, you know, there are instances of Sharia authorities not respecting orders from the civil court. And that I think, perhaps can best be seen from what transpired in Kasim Ahmad's case, or even Nick Reiner's case, where, you know, as the case played out in both courts, both civil and Sharia, and with orders coming out in one court, when it's brought before the Sharia court, there seems to be some hesitance about honouring the terms of those judgments or those orders given by the civil court. And I suppose, you know, you can also see that happening in this particular instance. Ezra Zayed, as you know, a couple of weeks back, he obtained an order from the Court of Appeal confirming that the prosecution's decision to prosecute is contrary to law. Despite that, you know, the relevant Sharia prosecuting officer still never, you know, made a request to defer the proceedings, supposedly because, you know, there are proceedings afoot in the civil court which allows them to perhaps keep this matter alive. But my problem with what they did in the Sharia courts is this. At the point in time, they made the request to adjourn the proceedings. As I understand it, there was no application for stay even filed. So when you don't file an application for stay in the civil court, how can you go to the other court, i.e. the Sharia court, and make the request that you're making? You know, you don't even have an order. You don't even have an application filed in the first place. So how can you make a request in the Sharia court saying that, you know, the matter ought to be deferred? I think if it's not contrary to law, it certainly is in bad faith.
Right. And from what we understand and what we've read, defense lawyer Zulkifli Chaeyong raised objections stating that the charges against Ezra are now illegal. What avenues are there in terms of response then? You know, what can be pursued?
Well, as I said earlier, the Court of Appeal order quashed or set aside the Sharia prosecution's decision to prosecute Ezra Zayed. And you know, Zulkifli Chaeyong rightly pointed out to the court that because of the Court of Appeal order, whatever that was taking place in the Sharia courts is essentially, you know, something, I suppose, which is contrary to law, given the fact that there is an order saying that. So when you have officers from the Sharia prosecuting authorities acting contrary to the terms, express terms of the civil court order, that means, you know, they're not respecting or they're not obeying the terms of the civil court order. So moving forward, what Ezra Zayed can do, I suppose, is to provide instructions to institute suitable proceedings in the civil court to essentially ensure that they do not continue to disrespect the civil court's order.
And Ezra has said that he has instructed his lawyers to file contempt of court proceedings on all relevant parties. What does that entail?
In simple terms, it's basically a process which can be filed to point out to the court that someone has disrespected the clear terms of that court's order. And there are two stages to it. The first stage is to get the permission of court to cite the relevant party for contempt. And the second stage is for that very same party to then come forward and explain their conduct, why they did what they did. And as I pointed out earlier, at the point in time when the relevant Sharia prosecuting officer made that request to adjourn the proceedings, you know, there was no application, as I understand it, there was no application even filed for stay of this Court of Appeal order. So because there was no application at all, I think certainly there's a lot that he probably has to answer for when, you know, the time comes.
Nizam, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
You just heard from civil and Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashe, kind of clearing up or just explaining to us what has transpired. Next up, we are going to be hearing from Ezra himself. How could we not? We spoke to him the last time there was a decision on this, so we just wanted to check in again. And that's going to be coming your way after this. If you have any thoughts or comments, you can, of course, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's just about 6:21 in the evening. You are with Lynn, Kelvin and Ayman on the Evening Edition. And next up, well, actually for this half hour, we have been talking about kind of the legal proceedings surrounding Ezra Zayed, the ones that we thought were kind of slowing down, perhaps even grinding to a halt. And instead, it turns out perhaps not the case. So we heard earlier from Nizam Bashe, who is a civil and Sharia lawyer, about kind of the legal circumstances surrounding that. And, you know, back in September 27th, yeah, we had Ezra live in the studios with us to just kind of talk about how he was feeling that day. And we thought it would be good to really do the same. So we're checking in, of course, with Ezra Zayed. Ezra, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for having me on, and I hope it's not that much of a slow news day.
No, it was a choice. Thank you very much. So I guess, first of all, how are you feeling?
Better, yes, than yesterday. And I think, obviously, you know, you don't try and make sort of decisions when you're not feeling so great about things. And yesterday was a disappointing decision, obviously for me personally, but it is one of those things where you can anticipate that these things were to happen. You hope they don't happen because it creates a chain of events that puts the rule of law in this country in a bad light, and that's not what we want. And, you know, I think for listeners who may or may not have understood what Nizam was saying was that, you know, there's a process to things, and we have to follow that process for it to work. And if we don't follow it, then, you know, it creates a very scary chain of events when it comes to the rule of law.
And what were some of your initial thoughts yesterday when the decision was first announced?
My initial thoughts was, you know, you're scratching your head in a bit of disbelief. Not that I'm, you know, a particularly trained lawyer of any sort, but I've done this long enough to sort of look at my lawyer at the right times and ask, can they do that? Is that something that is permissible? Is that within the constraints of what the law allows? And so you're always just trying to process to see whether what is being done in front of you is something that is actually permissible. And so when you sort of gain insight that perhaps this is going outside of the bounds of what is normal, then, you know, you have to take some sort of action to hopefully provoke a reaction. And that's what we're trying to do in citing, I guess, a contempt of proceedings with the relevant parties.
So this has been an ongoing part of your life for the last 6 to 7 years, and being maybe some parts of that previously as your producer, seeing you come in your suit, that's when I know you've been to court. I just wonder what's keeping you going at this point.
Well, I think it's a conversation that, you know, I have, well, primarily with myself, but also with my family and my lawyers, is that, you know, you want to try and see the end of these things in the best way possible. And, you know, when you're at year 7 going to year 8, you know, in May next year, you want to cap it off at some point. And so I think with where things are, it's obviously disappointing, because I had a funny suspicion that me coming on the show maybe in September was a bit premature, because these kind of things do happen, and this is why these court cases take so long. But the frustration, you know, whether it's for myself or for others in a similar position, is that you don't want justice to be delayed. And when justice is delayed, you know, justice is not done. And so that's sort of the real sort of conundrum that I'm finding myself in, but hopefully not for that much longer.
You know, considering what you just said about coming on the show in September, I feel bad about asking you the next question. But but I did ask you this at the time. And so I do think it's a good one to just kind of check in on you with. Are you hopeful? Are you hopeful that this is going to be resolved in your favor ultimately?
Well, I think, you know, you have to be hopeful, but I think hope sometimes is not enough. I think there needs to be a check-in towards whether I have the determination to see this out in the same way that perhaps some religious authorities are checking in on their perseverance to see this out too. So at this juncture, you need to be hopeful, but I think you also need to try and figure out what is the best course of action that can see, I guess, a conclusion to this entire situation.
For what it's worth, in the time that we've been on air with you, we've heard from Sue, who says, Ezra, stay strong. There are many who support you. I am one of them.
Oh, well, that's very nice, Sue. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thank you, Ezra, for speaking with us. You just heard from BFM's Ezra Zayed, also the director of ZI Publications, also the Ezra who is, I suppose, still going to go to court next year. Fingers crossed it works out. And in the meantime, you can send your thoughts through to us. You can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after the news at 6:30. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.